陪同爱人常回家看看，妈妈中背篓。Oh my god, Chinese music is so cheesy. Welcome to Chinese Work Ethic. I'm Sunny Fong. This is part two of Go Back to Your Country. I actually really love this song. It's called Chang Hui Jia Kan Kan. Which in Mandarin means return home often or come home often. I think a lot of Chinese people struggle with going home, either logistically or they just don't have the money. Many young people in China leave their rural villages to work in factories, restaurants, hotels. They rarely get to see their elders and their family members, maybe once a year during Chinese New Year. But I think it's always important to go home. I left at 6 a.m. to make the 3.5-hour journey from Hong Kong to my ancestral village in mainland China called Sunwei. Sunwei is a district in southern China in the Guangdong province, and Guangdong means Cantonese. So if you notice the seniors in Toronto, most of them would be from this district and the surrounding areas. Sunwei is a huge place though, it's over 1,300 kilometers squared. But the urban areas only make up about 144 kilometers. In Sunwei there are about 87 million people. 87 million people in this district. It's unbelievable. My distant relative, Cindy, who works in Hong Kong, was nice enough to join us on our journey. Once we passed the border through Samzhan or Shenzhen, she was quick to point out all the factories that we were driving by. I saw the Weibo headquarters, China's competitor to Facebook. But the most striking thing were the buildings that had Samsung and Apple logos emblazoned on the front. These were the factories where workers were making next to nothing to build our phones and our electronics. Because the factories are so far from people's villages, they actually have apartment complexes within those factories where people lived. On the ground floor, there were restaurants, a shopping mall, and other amenities. These thousands and thousands of Chinese workers lived where they worked. These were the factories where suicides were being reported. Oftentimes, six people were crammed into one room or dormitory. I've read that conditions have improved since. Some factory workers actually even tried to unionize. But the problem with that is even though Cantonese workers were getting smarter, it was a losing battle. Brands can easily move factories and go north, go west. With increasing wages and demands for safety, brands can easily just pick up and leave and go to another part of China. It was certainly interesting but disturbing to see. I mean, I'm recording on equipment that was made in those factories. I was on my way to go see where I came from, but we as a society don't think about where things come from. When we arrived in the city near my ancestral village, Cindy's brother picked us up and drove us into the rural area. I had never seen so much farmland in my entire life. Vast bodies of shrimp farms and quarries. Luscious jungles. But finally we entered the gates of my village, Gujiang. It was 10:30 in the morning, and when we stepped out of the car, we were greeted by my dad's uncle, Sukong. I only knew Sukong from a few pictures and what my dad used to tell me. He was a man in his 70s with white hair, a dark tan face. He had a penchant for American cigarettes, whores, and vodka. I shook his hand as soon as we met, and we both smiled and posed for pictures. I had never seen that much joy and pride in someone's face. Certainly not about me. Vodka and cigarettes. I had a feeling Sukong and I were probably going to get along. Turns out that lunch was canceled and the restaurant wasn't ready for us, so we postponed it to an evening banquet instead to celebrate my return to the ancestral village. Meanwhile, I had brought two friends and we wanted to explore. Cindy's mom actually lives in the village, so we asked her if she could take us around. I was dying to see where my mother and father grew up, and I had blessing duties to take care of. Cindy's mom made it so easy for us. She walked us directly to where my mom grew up, her childhood home where she lived with her five siblings, my grandma and my grandpa. The house was dilapidated and old, empty but full of stuff at the same time. My family actually pays someone to watch the house, but several years ago it got ransacked, so a lot of our heirlooms and antiques are gone. Well, what they did leave were pictures all over the wall of our family. It was almost like a shrine to our family. There were pictures of my cousins getting married, pictures of me at graduation, the whole history of our family on both sides. After I looked at that collage on the wall of our family, I vowed one day to take it with me. Probably not a good idea to steal my first time in China. I lit incense to pay respect to our ancestors. I went into my mother's room. There was a large mahogany bunk bed on the left, covered in blankets and dust. My mom used to tell me she would complain about how hard the bed was. Mattresses were not a thing back then. I noticed on the ceiling there was a skylight. This was the skylight that my mother told me that when she was a little girl, she'd lie on her back and watch the stars at night. I continued on to the kitchen and noticed a chicken pen right under the stove. And when I say stove, I mean cooking area. It was more like a pit where they used a special kind of twig to kindle the fire. Couldn't imagine having to harvest something every time I wanted to cook a meal. The kitchen was smaller than my closet. We left the house and continued through a few alleyways to where my father grew up, his childhood home. His place was jam-packed with stuff. My father pays this woman to watch the house, and she and her two kids live there. I once again lit some incense and decided to explore the back of the house. I saw a light coming from the back room, so I opened the door. I found two kids sitting at a desk on the internet. Cindy told me that the village just got internet for the first time. We ended up taking a long walk, exploring other villages. Everyone could tell we were outsiders, especially my red-headed, pasty white friend who was with me. A man on a motorcycle drove by, stopped, got off, pointed at him, and started yelling, "White man, white man, white man!" But in the nicest way possible, of course. I met an old woman who was half blind. She told me that she hadn't seen her son or daughter in a long time, and that she was stuck in the village to take care of the grandkids while they worked in the city. It was like The Walking Dead. Rarely did we see anyone our age. What was once tens of thousands of people has been reduced to a few thousand seniors, unable to leave, not healthy enough to work. I walked around wondering how isolated they must feel. But what do I know? Sukong seems to be having a great time. Little did I know, Sukong was back at the town restaurant waiting for us, anxious to start the party. I won't lie, one of the most exciting things about visiting China was the food. Yes, I wanted to explore my identity, find my roots, and explore some gaps in our family history. But the one thing that keeps me going when I travel is the possibility of a great meal. When we got to the restaurant in town for the banquet, Suk Gong was standing at the front door, waiting to greet us with a big smile. The restaurant in the village was just a few minutes away. It was a two-story building flanked by other shops. On the left was a building with a railing. I saw a few women standing, watching us. Downstairs in front, a few women stood there in high heels. I asked Cindy who these women were because they were just standing there still, staring at us. She leaned in and told me that they were prostitutes. Prostitutes? We have prostitutes in my ancestral village? This little buttfuck nowhere of a town? Turns out prostitution in China is a serious crime. And because everyone knows everybody in these small towns, these brothels are frequented by out-of-towners. Men would travel hours just to get to another village to partake in these services. Cindy said, "You'll know who the prostitutes are because they're the only ones that wear high heels." I had heard that Suk Gong was one of those customers, but I don't think he strayed too far from the village. Probably not a good idea to shit where you eat, but he didn't seem like the type of person to care. When we walked into the restaurant, it didn't look like a restaurant at all. It looked more like an old cafeteria with a big, bustling kitchen in the back. Everything smelled so incredible. The oils coming from wok-fried vegetables, garlic sizzling, and one of my favorites, the smell of barbecued meats. Our village was known for the best roast goose in the world. Cindy's mom had gone to Goose Street and came back with a few birds. Tour guides take people from around the world to the street to try our famous goose. I had always read about it, so my eyes popped when I saw a full goose on the table. There were several tables of people that I had no idea who they were, so I went around, said hello, and sat down to watch the dishes come to the table. I had never seen a feast like this before. Someone had told me that all the cooks at this restaurant were doing culinary school internships. I couldn't believe the Cantonese fare they put out. There was fresh shrimp caught that day, poached to perfection with a simple dipping sauce of soy and cilantro. Fried eggs, chilies, hand-rolled glass noodles topped with honey from Suk Gong's beehives. A plate of unidentifiable entrails. Succulent braised duck marinated in fermented soy and black tea. A steamed white fish drizzled in hot oil, topped with ginger and minced scallions. A beautiful yellow poached chicken. Stir-fried garlic pig stomach. Bowls of white rice from our village, considered to be the most fragrant and best white rice in Cantonese cooking. And of course, shot after shot of Chinese rice vodka. In the middle of the meal, I walked around and gave everyone a toast. It's very customary for you to visit each table. I wasn't the host, but I assumed I was the honorary guest. And of course, I was paying for the meal. When I came back to the table, Suk Gong was pretty red-faced. He had already been drinking the whiskey I had bought him, and now he was moving on to this awful Chinese vodka. My friend Adam had a few shots with me, but he eventually stopped. But Suk Gong kept pouring shots for the both of us, and I wasn't going to lose this race. I don't know if it was just the lovely food, the atmosphere, the smiling faces, or just the excitement of being in China for the first time, but I didn't get drunk. I think I might have had 20 shots. I'll be honest, I did feel a bit of a buzz. Suk Gong and I sat and commiserated. He was really the last person on my dad's side to be left in the village. All his sons were in the cities working. And like many of our family members, they didn't visit very often. Sukong was telling me how he resented the fact that no one visited him for so long, but he was extremely happy that I was there. I think he even tried to give me a hug. He didn't ask me what I did for a living. He didn't ask me how old I was. He didn't even ask me how my parents were doing. He just wanted someone to listen to him. Thankfully, I understand Cantonese and speak fluently. Everyone at the restaurant assumed I didn't speak. But I can speak Cantonese in their dialect, as well as in their accent. When I broke out the Gujian, which is the accent that the village speaks, I was met with a bunch of surprised faces. My dad, uncles, and aunts still have that accent. I think people just assume you lose everything. You just get rid of your identity when you go west to Canada or the States. After the meal was done, we stumbled back to the house in complete darkness, using our phones as flashlights. We smoked cigarettes, drank tea, played with the kids, and watched bad TV until it was bedtime. The next morning, with our bellies still full, we were awoken by a man on a bicycle with a speaker system playing some undiscernible Chinese. I asked Cindy's mom what was going on with this racket, and she said that Sukong had hired someone to ride a bike around town announcing my arrival. He had set up another banquet, a lunchtime meal with more family members and workers from nearby factories. We got dressed and went down for breakfast. Apparently in my culture, breakfast was leftover roast goose, plain noodles, with a big chicken foot sticking out of it. I looked at my poor vegetarian friend and apologized. He just took the foot out and ate the noodles. We arrived at the restaurant shortly after, and this time there were even more tables and more people sitting down for lunch. Who does Sukong think I am? A Rockefeller? Thankfully, these large banquet meals only cost me 1,100 renminbi. That's only about $200 to feed about 40 people. At the end of lunch, everyone took plastic bags and filled them with scraps for their dogs. We decided to walk around to explore the village a little bit more. We learned that people dried the rice kernels right on the street. Dogs and cars went right around these piles. We had noodles at a dumpling shop for 75 cents. Young girls were hand-making the dumplings next to us. When I paid the bill, I tipped them 500%. Tipping's not a thing in China. They looked at me with shock as we left. I decided to pop into a local wine shop. The people behind the counter didn't greet us and looked at us like we were thieves. We each decided to buy a bottle of something. And when we brought the bottles to the counter to pay, again, looks of shock. They gave us nicer boxes and a wine opener. It was nice to patron a store that probably didn't get 5 customers a day. We walked by a strange building in the village. There were bars on the windows, and the greenery had grown right over the walls. It looked like a mental institution. Well, I wasn't far off. Cindy's dad told us it was a hospice for people with troubles. China doesn't have a great track record with treating people with disabilities. This horrible, dank-looking building was a place for people to die. It was getting late and we had to catch the next bus back to Hong Kong, so Cindy's brother drove us to the local senior center to say goodbye to Sukong and Cindy's dad. When I walked in, Cindy's dad and Sukong were sitting, playing mahjong, and smoking cigarettes. I'm a mahjong fanatic, so I really wanted to sit down and play with them. But unfortunately, we had to go. On the bus ride back to Hong Kong, I promised myself that I would return as often as possible. Even though there's not much to do in the village, I felt like I only got a small slice of what my culture was. How privileged I was to be able to come and go as I please. How lucky was I that my parents left this village, came to Canada to make a life for themselves, and to give a life to me, full of opportunity and choices. I didn't have to work 20 hours away from my family to make jeans. I didn't have to stand and make dumplings 10 hours a day. I didn't have to live at a factory making phones, the very phone that I'm recording on. Despite feeling very in tune with the village, this wasn't my home. I was an outsider, a visitor, coming to a place to find my so-called roots, entering the village like a king in my Western clothes, and leaving as a piece of shit. People toiled at these factories, killing their backs in the fields plowing, while seniors like Sukkung sat in the village, isolated and alone. As the bus drove by the Samsung and Apple factories once again, I was reminded how privileged I was. Privileged to have the money to buy a plane ticket to come to this place. Privileged to have the time to soul search, to explore the notion of ethnic identity, to eat that roast goose twice, and to pay for everyone's meal. The ultimate privilege was not to come to this place, but to be able to leave. I attempted to visit the village again, but a relative had gotten into some gambling debt with a bookie. He apparently owed 1 million renminbi, which is 150,000 American dollars. He was in big trouble, and he was being held for ransom. For a whole year, he went missing. And for safety reasons, I wasn't allowed to return back to the village. I was told that if I ever stepped foot in Sunwui, a group of thugs would take me to the nearest ATM, possibly kidnap me and hold me for ransom. So I never got to see Sukkung again. He passed away this October. The relative's troubles are over, and he's back with his family. So I will be visiting the village again. Hopefully this is the beginning of a creative project. I want to go back to China as much as possible. Even though my great-uncle's heart gave out, I hope that my heart is still in Sunwei.